90.1 FM wishes you a bright winter solstice.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
What are we doing wrong?
We come right back.
We're exercising our
constitutional rights. You come right back.
What they're doing is illegal. What they're doing is illegal. Those fences are illegal.
Thousands of Amazon workers have launched the largest strike against Amazon in U.S. history. We'll speak with an Amazon worker from Georgia and the president of a New York local. Then, as Luigi Mangione is extradited to New York and charged in the killing of the CEO of United Healthcare, we'll look at the growing anger directed at the health insurance industry. Kevin Dwyer was denied life-saving medicine for cystic fibrosis by United Healthcare for 9 months.
When I went through my denial with United Healthcare, I was extremely angry, and I know that there's plenty of other people out there when I was going through mine that I talked to who are going through similar things. The one thing that I hope is that the United Healthcare, all insurance companies, and the politicians will wake up and see the anger and that healthcare needs to be reformed.
We'll also speak with leading healthcare advocate Elizabeth Benjamin about what you do when your claim is denied. Then don't obey in advance.
Right now, we actually have much more power than we think we do. Our actions are magnified outwards now. When protest becomes illegal or dangerous, this is going to change. But right now, Americans actually have more power than they think they do.
Yale historian Timothy Snyder on tyranny. On everything from Trump's billionaire cabinet to ABC News' multi-million dollar settlement with President-elect Trump. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel's relentless attacks across the Gaza Strip killed at least 77 Palestinians over the past 24 hours. An Israeli strike on two schools turned shelters killed at least 15 displaced Palestinians in Gaza City. Meanwhile, Israeli forces have continued their siege on North Gaza with attacks reported in Beit Hanun. Israeli quadcopters were also seen shooting civilians in Jabalia al-Balad. Meanwhile, the UN General Assembly Thursday overwhelmingly approved a resolution asking the International Court of Justice to assess Israel's obligations to facilitate the delivery of UN and international aid to Palestinians in Gaza. Israel's repeatedly blocked the entry of life-saving aid into the besieged territory. In more related news, Doctors Without Borders said in a new report published Thursday that Israel's war on Gaza depicts clear signs of ethnic cleansing. In the occupied West Bank, Israeli settlers Friday set fire to a mosque in the village of Marda, spray painting revenge and death to Arabs and Hebrew on the Muslim holy site. The Palestinian Foreign Ministry condemned the attack, calling on the UN to launch an investigation. This is Nasfat Al-Khufash, head of the Marda Village Council.
Today on Friday, Marda woke up to a systemic terror attack by a group of settlers who set fire to Bir al-Waladin Mosque. A number of settlers set fire and attempted an attack on a wider scale in the mosque. As you see the aftermath of this, along with writing racial slurs such as death to Arabs and that they will burn this mosque to build a synagogue. These attacks are continuous and systematic by settler groups.
The attack on the mosque came as at least six Palestinians were killed across the West Bank, including an 80-year-old woman who was shot in the chest by Israeli forces during a raid in the Balata refugee camp near Nablus Thursday. In Tul Karm, at least four Palestinians were killed in an Israeli airstrike on a vehicle. Senior U.S. officials have arrived in Damascus on the first U.S. diplomatic mission to Syria in over a decade. The officials are expected to meet with members of HTS, Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, the armed Islamist group that helped overthrow Bashar al-Assad's regime earlier this month. The meeting's occurring even though HTS remains on the State Department's terrorist list. This comes as questions remain over the fate of Kurdish populations in Syria. A commander of the U.S.-backed Syrian Kurdish forces said it would agree to withdraw any non-Syrian Kurdish fighters from northern Syria if Turkey agrees to a complete ceasefire.
We said that we are ready to withdraw our forces from the border and for the area to be free of our forces and for the international security forces to be present instead of our forces. In addition to the presence of American forces in the area to supervise this area on the condition that there is a complete truce.
The Wall Street Journal reports an official in the Syrian Kurd civilian administration's directly appealed to Donald Trump to pressure Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan against sending troops into Syria. Meanwhile, press freedom groups have condemned the killing of two Kurdish women journalists, Cihan Belki and Nazim Dashtam, by a Turkish drone as they were reporting on attacks on the Tishrin Dam on the outskirts of Kobani. Meanwhile, Syria's interim education minister reassured the nation that a new government will not restrict girls' access to education. On Thursday, Syrian youth and women gathered in Damascus to call for their rights to be respected in any new government.
We are here to participate as youths, in order to be together hand in hand, to be a secular, democratic state where there is equality and maintenance of women's rights. So far, we do not know what the situation will be, and we are not attacking or judging anyone because it is still so early. But it is our right to hold on to our rights. It is our right to know where we are going to and participate together, as Syrians, to build a Syria for all.
Thousands of Amazon warehouse workers and delivery drivers at seven facilities across four states, New York, Georgia, California, and Illinois, are entering a second day of an historic strike. After taking to the picket lines Thursday, it comes after Amazon refused to bargain fair contract as workers demand higher wages, better benefits, and safer working conditions. The Teamsters described it as the largest strike against Amazon in U.S. history. President Sean O'Brien said in a statement, quote, "If your package is delayed during the holidays, you can blame Amazon's insatiable greed," unquote. Here in New York, police stormed the picket line at an Amazon facility in Queens, arresting an Amazon driver on strike and a Teamsters leader. They were both later released. On Wednesday, reports emerged of Amazon founder and Washington Post owner Jeff Bezos dining with President-elect Trump and tech billionaire Elon Musk at Mar-a-Lago. We'll have more on this story after headlines. As the Amazon action picks up steam, unionized Starbucks workers have launched 5 days of phased strikes as the coffee giant has repeatedly refused to bargain in good faith. Starbucks baristas in Los Angeles, Chicago, and Seattle are striking today. The action will escalate through Christmas Eve. Over 500 Starbucks stores nearly unanimously voted to approve the strike. The U.S. government appears to be hurtling towards a shutdown after the House voted down a new Trump-approved bill Thursday evening that included a 2-year suspension of federal debt limit. This comes after Trump and Elon Musk intervened to sink the previous bipartisan package. House Speaker Mike Johnson has until the end of the day to introduce and pass another spending measure before a partial shutdown is triggered tonight. An appeals court Thursday disqualified Fulton County District Attorney Fani Willis from overseeing Georgia's election interference case against Donald Trump and his 18 co-defendants. Her removal follows revelations of a prior relationship with the lead prosecutor. The fate of the sweeping criminal racketeering case against Trump is unclear, but it's likely to be paused as Trump returns to office or dismissed altogether. Luigi Mangione, the suspect in the shooting death of UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson, was arraigned in a New York court Thursday after being extradited from Pennsylvania and charged with murder, 2 stalking charges, and a firearms offense. The federal murder charge carries a possible death penalty. Mangione had already been facing state murder and terrorism charges. A handcuffed Mangione was led into custody by a massive escort in New York, including heavily heavily armed police and Mayor Eric Adams. The case has galvanized public outrage over the U.S. health insurance industry. We'll have more on this story later in the broadcast. A former top advisor to embattled New York Mayor Eric Adams was indicted on bribery and conspiracy charges Thursday. Ingrid Lewis Martin resigned Sunday ahead of the expected indictment. Her son and two real estate agents were also charged in the case, which accused them of making over $100,000 in exchange for expediting approvals on construction projects. It's just the latest indictment of a close associate of Mayor Adams, who himself was indicted in a federal corruption case. President Biden laid out a new target to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by up to 66% in 2035 compared to 2005 levels. The Biden administration says that even with Trump's return to office, that target can still be met if states and local governments commit to their emission reduction goals. Independent studies have shown the U.S. is not currently on track to meet such targets. Meanwhile, a group of employees from the Environmental Protection Agency and the Department of Energy published an open letter to the White House Thursday condemning the withholding of federal climate funds from the group Climate Justice Alliance after it spoke out against genocide in Gaza. The group called on the U.S. agencies to end their collaboration with Israel, writing, quote, "We decry the prioritization of funding for bombs and tanks over the resourcing of communities impacted by accelerating climate disasters." In Sudan, the World Food Program is reporting at least three of its staff were killed in an aerial bombardment. It's unclear if the attack was carried out by the Sudanese Army or paramilitary rapid support forces, which have intensified their fighting as the war in Sudan enters its 20th month. The agency warns Sudan risks becoming the world's largest hunger crisis in recent history, with 1.7 million people either facing famine or at risk of famine. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken Thursday announced $200 million in humanitarian aid to Sudan. Meanwhile, Reuters reports the Biden administration has vowed to provide U.S. lawmakers an assessment on whether the United Arab Emirates is providing weapons to the rapid support forces by January 17th. Both warring parties in Sudan have been accused of human rights violations. French President Emmanuel Macron was met with protests and booing crowds Thursday as he toured the devastating aftermath of Cyclone Chido in the Indian Ocean islands of Mayotte, which is a French territory. Anger's mounting over the insufficient aid delivered since the disaster. Only 31 deaths have been confirmed, but many fear the true toll could be in the thousands. Survivors say they've been left with nothing.
Nothing. All the food we had, the rice, the meat, the sugar, it's all gone. All the fruits, the mangoes that were left, all gone. We have nothing to eat. I want to ask that when the help arrives, that it's shared with everybody, not only for people with identity documents, undocumented people as well, because we're all facing the same struggle.
In Nigeria, at least 35 children were killed in a crowd crush at a school fair in the southwestern city of Ibadan. Police have arrested eight people, including the main sponsor of the event, which had said it expected some 5,000 children to take part after advertising gifts and prizes, including scholarships. And Ecuador has converted part of its $1.5 billion external debt into a fund aimed at the protection of forests and wetlands in the Amazon rainforest. The Ecuadorian government renegotiated its debt, resulting in some $460 million in savings that'll be allocated toward the efforts. Ecuadorian President Daniel Noboa praised the completion of the country's second debt for nature swap.
The demand for this program has been incredible. It has been more than four times what we were actually able to place. This is a good sign. It is a sign for the future that there can be mechanisms like this on a slightly larger scale and can generate a more significant impact.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Thousands of Amazon workers organizing with the Teamsters Union have launched the largest strike against Amazon in U.S. history. In the midst of peak holiday shopping season, drivers and workers at seven facilities in New York, Georgia, Illinois, and California went on strike Thursday to pressure Amazon to come to the negotiating table as workers demand better benefits, higher wages, and safer working conditions. The strike comes days after the Senate Labor Committee, led by Senator Bernie Sanders, published a report that found Amazon systematically ignores and rejects recommended worker safety measures and deliberately misrepresents workplace injury data. This is a video from the Teamsters with workers explaining why they're joining the strike.
I believe a strike is definitely going to make Amazon realize that we're not playing, we're serious.
BBK4 has started a revolution, and I believe that Amazon will wilt under the pressure and cave in and pay us.
Amazon is not respecting us. We've been trying to get Amazon to recognize us as Teamsters, and they're not coming to the table.
And that's why now we are ready to strike them, to actually show them what exactly we are fighting for.
On Wednesday night, just before the strike began, Amazon founder Jeff Bezos dined with President-elect Donald Trump and billionaire Elon Musk at Mar-a-Lago. Bezos also committed to donate $1 million to Trump's inauguration fund through Amazon. As workers continue to join picket lines at hundreds of Amazon fulfillment centers across the country, Amazon spokesperson Kelly Nantel claimed in a statement most of the workers on strike are, quote, almost entirely outsiders, not Amazon employees or partners, and the suggestion otherwise is just another lie from the Teamsters, unquote. The $2 trillion company employs more than 1.5 million people. The Teamsters represent about 10,000 workers. Teamsters President Sean O'Brien said in a statement, quote, if your package is delayed during the holidays, you can blame Amazon's insatiable greed. We gave Amazon a clear deadline to come to the table and do right by our members. They ignored it, unquote. For more, we're joined by two guests. Ron Sewell is with us, an Amazon associate at Amazon facility in East Point, Georgia. He's joining us from Fort Worth, Texas. And here in New York, we're joined by Connor Spence, the president of the only Amazon local, ALU-IBT Local 1, at the Staten Island Amazon Warehouse, the first Amazon facility to unionize. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Connor, let's begin with you. Explain this strike and respond to Amazon saying these are all outsiders who are striking.
Yeah, so for more than 2 years at our facility, JFK in Staten Island, Amazon has been refusing to come to the table, negotiate a strong union contract with the workers. This is obviously in violation of federal law. Now across the country, they have this same obligation with bargaining units, over 20 of them across 10 states. We are all joined together as part of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, National Amazon Division, and we're engaging in a coordinated action to try to put the pressure on Amazon, stop breaking the law, come to the table. This is an unfair labor practice strike over their refusal to bargain.
And can you talk more about the significance of this largest strike against Amazon in history?
Well, in the U.S., there hasn't been large coordinated action like this. And actually, I do want to comment on the point Amazon is trying to make that this is somehow just an outsider action. You can go to any one of these picket lines where the workers have walked off the job and see that's not the case. Last time I was on the show, I talked about how Amazon has 150% turnover in their warehouses nationwide. Something like this, organized on this scale, has to be internal, has to be worker to worker. It has to come from the inside. The idea that this could be done by outsiders is just ridiculous on Amazon's part. It's really a narrative I think they want to push so that other workers who are not yet organizing don't see this and become inspired that they can also fight to change their conditions.
At the Amazon picket line in Queens here in New York Thursday, police arrested then released Teamsters organizer Anthony Rosario, as well as Jagernsen Cardenas, one of the striking Amazon workers. NYPD agents also threatened the crowd with mass arrest. Journalist Luis Feliz León of Labor Notes captured the moment of Cardenas' arrest. New York police officers swarmed Cardenas and blocked him in the cab of his van. So if you can describe the scene and the scene around the country, Connor.
I would say there's a lot of energy, a lot of activity. I mean, I don't think it's like I think it's very significant to point out to people that it's the dead of winter. We're nearing the holidays. People would rather walk off the job than spend another day in the warehouse under those conditions. And I think you can really, when you go to these picket lines, you can feel that energy. The workers are, they're tired, they feel exploited, they feel abused. And the only thing stopping more workers from taking action is just that, you know, the time it takes to organize in these conditions. And it's going to keep building, and you can sense that when you're on the line.
I wanted to also bring in Ron Sewell, Amazon associate working in East Point, Georgia, also an Amazon Learning Ambassador, helps train new hires and other associates punished by Amazon for organizing on safety issues. He filed an unfair labor practice against Amazon, and Amazon settled. He's usually in Georgia, but now in Fort Worth, Texas. Talk about the issues that you face and other workers face.
Thank you for having me. Yes, the issues that we face there is the common safety issues such as clean water, cool air in the South, overheating building, people passing out, and no, when I say no response from management to even speak with us or talk with us. And therefore, that's why we are in strong support of the New York picketers. And we're doing the same thing here in the location, East Point.
Can you talk about the dangers that workers face, the level of injury on the job? Talk about what Senator Sanders talked about in the Senate.
Well, the dangers in the job, what Senator Sanders talked about, is real. We have employees just recently, last week, I had to assist an employee who passed out that was working the early morning, and he was trying to get to a place where he can sit down either in the break room or in the restroom, but before he even reached that area, he passed out on the floor in front of me, hitting his head, hitting his face. So the danger is real. It's not something that we're making up. We have an older population as well as younger populations, and that's something health-wise, safe-wise, that we submitted a request to OSHA, and we got a visit by them, and they went through the whole facility.
Has ATL-6 in Atlanta and East Point unionized?
No, we have not unionized, but we do have the full support of the Teamsters and what have you, and we are fighting for our individual rights, and we will continue doing that and continue supporting the Teamsters and all others in getting Amazon to come at least management, talk with us, listen to our demands, listen to our concerns.
If you can explain who's unionized and who hasn't, Connor, and explain your position. You're the only president of a local Amazon Teamsters unit.
So in 2022, we were the first warehouse to win an actual NLRB election. Since then, many other warehouses across the country have gone through the NLRB process, not quite the same way we did. Instead, they signed a majority of their coworkers on union cards, demonstrated that majority of the company. The company, under a newer NLRB ruling, had about 2 weeks to contest that majority, file elections with the NLRB. They refused to do so. So in doing so, it was a tacit recognition that those majorities exist. And therefore, that has happened in over 20 bargaining units across the country. And that number continues to grow as the movement expands and we organize more workers.
The Teamsters president, O'Brien, spoke controversially at the Republican convention. Do you think unions will do better under Trump?
I mean, I think it remains to be seen. I'm very much a fan of the current NLRB General Counsel, Jennifer Brusseau. But I think that ultimately what we've learned, even in the past 4 years under Biden, is that the NLRB is not the main instrument of change here. It's building worker power, and we have to do that under any administration, under any NLRB.
And are you calling for people not to use Amazon, to boycott Amazon?
I think a better thing for me to say is if you choose to shop on Amazon this holiday, a good thing to do would be to meet with your driver, have a conversation with them when they drop off your package, ask them about their working conditions. If there are things they would want to change, tell them that you've seen Amazon workers organizing on TV, that they should consider joining the Teamsters, and they have the full support of you and the community if they choose to do that.
Well, I want to thank you very much for being with us. Connor Spence is president of Amazon Labor Union, IBT Local 1. And I want to thank Ron Sewell for joining us, ex-Amazon associate working in the ATL 6 facility in East Point, Georgia, talking to us from Texas. Coming up is Luigi Mangione is brought to New York and charged in the killing of the CEO of United Healthcare, Brian Thompson. We'll look at the growing anger directed at the health insurance industry. Stay with us. Kolesnikov, opening song to the film Underground, and a favorite of Stephen Englander. The visionary director of ABC No Rio, who died last Friday at the age of 63 from a rare lung disease he battled for years while securing a new site for the legendary New York City DIY art and community space. He lived long enough to see the groundbreaking in July. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Luigi Mangione, the suspect in the shooting death of UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson, appeared in a federal court here in New York Thursday after being extradited from Pennsylvania, where he was arrested. Prior to the court appearance, Mangione was seen in Lower Manhattan being escorted from a helicopter by the FBI, by the New York Police Department, and New York Mayor Eric Adams. He's been charged with first-degree murder, second-degree murder as an act of terrorism for fatally shooting Thompson on the morning of December 4th, as the CEO was walking to UnitedHealth's annual investor conference. A newly filed federal complaint has revealed new details about a notebook Mangione had at the time of his arrest. According to authorities, it, quote, contains several handwritten pages that express hostility toward the health insurance industry and wealthy executives in particular. In a separate manifesto, Luigi Mangione wrote, quote, frankly, these parasites simply had it coming. A reminder, the U.S. has the number one most expensive healthcare system in the world, yet we rank roughly 42 in life expectancy, he wrote. According to investigators, Mangione had written the words deny, defend, and depose on the bullet casings used in the assassination. The killing of the UnitedHealthcare CEO has brought renewed attention to the practices of the health insurance industry, and especially UnitedHealth Group, which made $22 billion in profits last year. We're joined now by two guests here in New York. Elizabeth Benjamin is with us. She is vice president of health initiatives at the Community Service Society of New York. She's co-founder of Healthcare for All New York campaign. And Kevin Dwyer is with us. He's a cystic fibrosis patient who's written about his battle with UnitedHealthcare after he was denied life-saving medicine. You have, you're a family of seven kids?
Yes, correct.
Four of you have cystic fibrosis,
correct.
Kevin?
Yes.
So talk about what happened to you.
Well, in 2012, there was a new medication that came onto the market called Kalydeco. It was a game-changing medication for cystic fibrosis patients. It, instead of just treating the symptoms of the disease, which is previously that's all we had, it actually started to work at the root cause of cystic fibrosis and the defective gene. It was only for one specific mutation out of thousands of mutations for cystic fibrosis. I concerned